Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, a transformative journey. In this enlightening episode, we dive into what is an empath and how do we navigate through this life if we have been gifted with the qualities of an empath. Today, we are privileged to have Jennifer Moore, an esteemed expert in the field. Jennifer brings her profound wisdom and expertise to guide us through the five essential steps to mastering the art of living as an empath. Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, empowering women to overcome midlife crisis by rewiring the subconscious mind. Feeling overwhelmed, disillusioned, stuck? We all have. Here we explore inspiration and empowerment to navigate through the tough times and move to a place where hearts soar, minds manifest, and bodies heal. Welcome, everyone. Today, we are going to talk about the empath with Jennifer Moore. Jennifer supports other highly sensitive, intuitive women to release overwhelm and access inner wisdom and power. Ooh, juicy stuff. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me, Jane. I'm really excited to be here today.
So glad to have you. You know what? I'm going to hit you with my number one question. And that is, how do you think a midlife crisis helps us transform into mastery? And then that'll lead into what is an empath?
That sounds awesome. So the immediate answer that comes to my mind is that a midlife crisis leads us into mastery because a midlife crisis, I think most of the time, is about looking at our lives with scrutiny and realizing that it's not going the way we want it to, that there are things that we have not realized, that there are things that we are doing that are not serving us, that there are relationships that maybe are draining and depleting us. And because we sort of hit that wall in that moment of crisis, we get to look at things and make different decisions, that we can get to make different choices. You know, and I think about the definition of the word crisis. And when I was in seminary many, many years ago, I learned that one of the roots of the word crisis is to decide, like that it's this idea of being placed in a situation where we're at a pivotal moment. And I think we tend to see the word crisis as simply the idea of, you know, disaster or tragedy happening to us. But there's more to a crisis, and that crisis really is the moment of opportunity, the moment of pivot. And I think the midlife crisis is that moment of reckoning that every single one of us comes to at some point that allows us to reevaluate and find the courage, hopefully, to say yes to something different and new. Right. How is that for an answer?
Oh, that's beautiful. I love it. And to realize, you know, we might not have been on the trajectory that we're supposed to be on, and to dig deep to find out what that is.
Well, and there's so many social and cultural expectations about what we are supposed to be doing. And I think that in general, as younger people, you know, many of us, especially females, are socialized to people please, to acquiesce, to go along to get along. And as a result, I think that there are a lot of people, and, you know, certainly I think a lot of women who kind of get to their 40s or 50s and go, this is not my beautiful life. This is not my beautiful house. How did I get here? Like, what happened that got me to this place? Because there's sort of a way that I think so many of us sort of sleepwalk through the first 30 or 40 or even 50 years of our life doing what is expected of us. And I think that I know that menopause seems to correlate with a lot of times for women with that point where suddenly it's kind of like, I'm going to choose my life. I am not going to keep living the life that other people want me to live.
Yes, that was my pivot.
Yeah.
Woke up one day and realized I'm living my parents' dream, not my own. And it saddens you in the moment, but then it makes you dig deep and
yes,
should be going. So that's such a beautiful segue into what we're going to talk about, which is the empath.
Yeah.
So what are the qualities of an empath?
So first off, a couple things. First off, I just want to say that in my perspective, being an empath or having empathic sensitivity is on a spectrum. And so there is not necessarily a fixed definition of like everybody who's an empath is this and this alone, because it's really like anything else in humanity or in the human experience, there's sort of degrees to this. But my personal, what I found in talking with a lot of other people and doing the work that I've done and writing the books that I've written and all of the other stuff is that an empath is a living being, could be a human being, could be an animal, who is picking up on the thoughts, the feelings, the energy, and the sensations from the world around them. But it can even be from the greater world around them. Like there are empaths who are so sensitive that they are picking up on things that are going on the other side of the world. And in some cases, with people who are really sensitive and kind of connected to sort of alternative dimensions, as it were, you might even have people who are aware of things like going on galactically. But that's sort of, I would say, more on the extreme side of it. But the thing that makes an empath unique compared to somebody who just happens to have empathy or who happens to be very intuitive or psychic or have mediumship abilities is that where people with intuition, with psychic abilities and mediumship are all picking up have extrasensory perception and are picking up more information than is obvious to the visible eye. Empaths are also have that extrasensory perception and that ability to pick up on things that are beyond the ordinary, beyond the visible. But unlike the intuitive or the psychic or the medium, the empath processes that information as if it's their own. And so an example of this would be if somebody who was very intuitive or psychic walked into a house where there had been a lot of tragedy, maybe somebody had been really sick and then died, you know, the person, the intuitive or the psychic is going to walk in and go, wow, I sense a lot of sadness in here. It feels like something really intense must have happened in here. Or, oh my goodness, there was this major disaster with this illness that happened in here. Whereas the empath will walk into that space and go, why do I suddenly feel so weird? Why do I suddenly feel so sick? Why do I suddenly feel so sad and bereft? And the challenge for empaths is that because we filter information as if it is our own, we often mistake experiences and things that are going that we are picking up as something that's happening from within that we need to fix. And when we can't fix it, when we can't just turn it around or flip it because it's not actually ours, we will often think there's something wrong with us or that we're broken or that there, you know, that if only we had tried harder, we could make it better. And in my experience, in all of the conversations, and I mean, I've had hundreds, if not thousands of conversations with other empaths and their experience growing up, one of the common things that many, I mean, I can count literally on less, I can count on less than five fingers, the people I've spoken to who were not told as children that they were too sensitive, that they were overreacting, that they were taking things too personally, and that they were making things up. And so as a result, children, empathic children, often pick up on the things that parents and other family members and other people do not want them to acknowledge because it's stuff they're trying not to acknowledge. And so instead of validating and saying, yeah, you're picking up on something, it's really hard. I don't really want anybody to know about it, but you're right. I am feeling really sad. I am feeling really angry. That what happens is a lot of times as very small children, empaths were told, you're making this up. This is not real. This is not happening. You're making too big a deal out of it. And so as a result, that processing as well as this is all on you. These are your emotions. You're the one who's feeling these hard things. And the challenge with that is that when an empath has been invalidated and denied about what they're picking up on, very often what will happen is it will turn into this sort of cascade of self-doubt. Mm-hmm. So long answer.
No, but brilliant. Because we're programmed as children. And if we're having these very valuable experiences, yet being told that they're not, or that they don't make sense, we lose trust in who we are.
Exactly. Exactly. And I have really seen, especially with you know, my students and with the one-on-one work that I've done with people over the years, how profoundly that invalidation impacts our ability to trust our intuition, to trust our instincts, to trust our gut. Because at a very, very early age, we were picking up, we were getting information, we were getting feedback, we were picking things up from the world around us. And it was accurate. But instead of being validated and told, yes, you are picking up something real here, isn't that wonderful that you're you're so sensitive, you get it. Instead of getting that validation, so many of us experienced the invalidation of, you know, that then caused a level of just this level of doubt to come in later. And I've just witnessed so many people, especially as they're navigating their sensitivity and trying to really sort of switch from empathic overwhelm to intuitive wisdom, just how much the answer comes in immediately. And then you can almost see somebody like you can watch their face just go from knowing to doubting. And, you know, and that sort of second guessing and questioning that I think comes from the experience of not having our truth or the truth validated when we were younger.
Right. And validated and then taught, like you say, how to hone it to intuitive wisdom, where we don't take it on personally.
Exactly.
Right. Which is very powerful.
Very powerful. I mean, and the thing is, where empathic, what I call it empathic overwhelm, but where, you know, when we are just flooded with the thoughts, feelings, energy, and sensations that are coming from the world around us, it can be, and we cannot discern what's ours and what's not ours. It makes it very, very hard to use that gift as sort of our GPS, as our compass as to how to navigate the world. Whereas when we can start to discern what's mine, what's not mine, what is being activated from some old story or experience deep within me that I need to address and heal, versus what is coming from my cranky boss or from my, you know, from an event that is about to happen or has just happened, you know, somewhere in my region, somewhere in my country, somewhere on the planet. If we can't discern between those two things, then it makes it very, very hard to use our abilities and our sensitivity in a way that helps us to navigate.
Yes. Yeah, so there should be some kind of mastery school for the empath. Let's wish this for the future.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if you were kind of joking, but that's kind of the work that I do, actually. I mean, book I wrote is called Empathic Mastery, and I created a thing called the Empathic Mastery Academy, which is all about learning how to move from empathic overwhelm to being a beacon for love and healing in the world. Because one of the things I also really believe is that as empaths, we can either be part of the problem or we can be part of the solution. And when we are picking up and drowning in the emotional soup and finding ourselves just spinning out from all the overwhelm, we unfortunately amplify the problem. We add to the problem. We contribute to the mess that's already there. And we are not effective. We are not able to be of service. We are not able to really make a huge difference, because even if we are trying to help, we're usually helping from a place of desperation and urgency and codependency and trying to rush into rescue. And when we can learn how to turn those gifts from absorbing to broadcasting and becoming beacons for love, for calm, for healing in the world, then suddenly we basically become sort of these nodes of light in the world that can broadcast grace instead of absorb misery.
Right.
Yeah. So
could you share some of these, maybe three simple ways to turn these gifts into mastery?
So I would say I can share some of the first steps, but three simple ways to turn overwhelm into mastery. That's a tall order. What I will say is that it is a process, not a pill, and that it takes time. You know, we didn't get this way overnight, and it's likely we're not going to completely turn it around overnight, either. But in my experience, the very first step to really starting to navigate this is, well, the very first step is just identifying ourselves, recognizing, oh yeah, I do recognize, like if somebody's listening to this and they'd never thought of themselves as an empath, but everything I'm saying is like, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, then just claiming that identity and understanding the impact of that. I mean, an example of that would be if somebody had an allergy to something, like if they were allergic to tomatoes and they kept eating tomatoes and they were like, why do I feel so lousy? It's like when you understand that you do not, like that you are, that the way you are made means that you should not be eating tomatoes. It makes life easier. And when we can understand that as empaths, we have a particular set of skills, to quote Liam Neeson, but that when we can identify that being an empath means that we both have a set of gifts and we also have some vulnerabilities, then we can start to navigate the world in a different way. And so in empathic mastery, I have a 5-step system, and it starts with recognize. And recognize starts with recognizing that we're empaths. Then it goes to recognizing that we are in a state of empathic distress, and we are in a state of like feeling out of sorts or disoriented, and sort of being like, I feel kind of wonky. I feel kind of weird. I think I'm picking something up. This doesn't correlate with anything I'm experiencing right now. And then from there, we can start to work on recognizing what's mine, what's not mine. And from that, we move to the second step of empathic mastery, which is release, where we start to release the stuff that is not ours, sending it back to wherever it belongs, not necessarily back to sender, returning to sender, but really sort of being like, you know, I release this back to where it belongs. And then from that release, we move into protection. We move into building up our energetic filters and shields so that we are not as porous, we are not as absorbent and sensitive to just taking everything in. Sort of like, I think empaths often have, you know, if you think about windows, you've got sort of like, you know, the storm window and the screen window and the regular paned glass. I think a lot of times empaths never got the storm window, and often the regular window is up and all there is a screen window with all kinds of stuff just blowing through. And so being able to develop a more robust filters and shields for our emotionally, mentally, and spiritually is a really important part of it. But when it comes to protection, there's also just the practical, pragmatic reality of like setting boundaries. And so a lot of times, because empaths feel better when other people feel better, we will give away our energy. We will deplete ourselves at the, you know, to try to help other people. And being able to, one of the things is when we start to understand that we feel better when other people feel better, especially when we have not done our own emotional work to be able to sit with discomfort. Once we understand that, we can start to learn to hold space for somebody's discomfort without trying to fix it or rescue it or make it better, but also to recognize what's my job? What's not my job? Do I have the bandwidth? Do I have the emotional reserves to show up and help this person right now? Or am I going to potentially be depleting myself and actually potentially causing harm to that other person because I don't have the, I call it spoons, which is a term that comes from sort of the autoimmune and chronic health world, but that I don't have the resources, I don't have the resilience, I don't have the spoons to be able to be of support in a way that means that this is going to be coming through good and clean. And so that level of understanding what it means to protect is not just some kind of woo thing about having a fluffy aura, but it really is also about not answering text messages from challenging people at 11 o'clock at night, recognizing when somebody asks you to do something and you already have plans or that you already are, you don't have the resources to make a difference, to not say yes, to know what is it that I am capable of doing and what is it that is not my job, like recognizing our scope of practice for a to use a clinical term, and not taking on jobs that really that we are not meant for. So protect is sort of the third step. And then after that, because I really believe that the universe abhors a vacuum, I move to connect, because if we don't want to be picking up all of the toxic sludge and the emotional negativity, we need to replace it with something better. And I'm a believer that this human experience is just a small percentage of the greater experience, and that when we connect into the greater experience, sort of the big I am, as opposed to you and I as the little I ams, that when we can connect to that divine source, that we are starting to, we become filled with something better than the fear and the worry and the misery that is so pervasive in the human experience and the human ego. And then from that, once we have made that connection from that, then I really believe it's about how do we live in a different way? How do we take action? So the fifth step is act, because it's all about the choices that we make on a daily basis and living with impeccability, living with integrity, living in a way that is really like deliberate and conscious and consensual. So as you can hear from my just describing the five steps, this is a journey and it is definitely a process. But to really talk about to really get down to the simple things, one, two, three. First, we recognize that we're picking something up. Second, we maybe put our hands over our hearts and just ask the question, is this mine? And then if we have, and usually we'll get the answer, yes, some of it is yours, but a lot of it is not. Once we ask that question and get an answer, the next question is, what's mine? What's not mine? And then the third step is, once we have a sense of what we're, of the fact that we're picking up or carrying something that's not ours, what I really like to do is just put my hands over my heart, take in a deep breath. And then as I exhale, sort of release my hands and say, I send this back to where it belongs. And so basically it's like recognizing that we're off, recognizing or discerning what's ours and what's not ours, and then starting to do the work of, this isn't mine. I'm going to send this back. Like I don't need to be carrying this around.
Yeah, because it's distorting and exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah. Distorting, depleting, exhausting, unnecessary. And the other thing is, so frequently when we get sucked into the path of the rescuer, we are often kind of in the role not only of rescuer, but of enabler. And often what is happening is if we are doing the emotional processing for that other person, we are depriving them of the opportunity to do their own work. We are depriving them of the opportunity to process their own stuff. Or we are thinking that we understand what's going on for them better than they do, and we're actually pulling focus away from their experience to our own emotional process about what they're experiencing, which is not real. And this is where there's a really funny paradox around the idea of when somebody is what I call an extreme empath. Sometimes when you're such an extreme empath that you're constantly being bombarded by all the feels and the fear and the thoughts and the everything coming from outside of ourselves, it can actually be incredibly hard to have empathy, because empathy in its nature is the capacity to really compassionately feel into what another human being or creature situation is going through. But there is a capacity to recognize that it's not me that's going through that. And as a result, to offer love and compassion back from this place of deep empathy. Whereas sometimes an empath will get so overwhelmed by the stuff that's happening that it can be like they get caught up in their own stuff and are not necessarily able to have empathy because they're just so stuck in the empath mode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when I was becoming a naturopathic doctor, feeling the overwhelm of how will I sit with people that need to heal and in pain. And over time, I learned that to listen and hold space and really be empathetic, but realize, just like you're saying, that that's not mine, and allowing them to find their own way.
Yes.
Was the path, right? But
yes,
it just happened over time, because you're scared to death, like you don't have the answers.
Right. Right. Well, and you know, this goes into a whole other, like, I mean, you and I have both been working as healers for a really long time. And I think that I'm imagining a really long time for you as well. But I think that one of the things that we really have to kind of undo is the idea or the expectation that as somebody in a healing profession or in a role of support for other people, that somehow it's our responsibility to provide the cure, that somehow it's our responsibility to have all the answers. And certainly the allopathic world kind of promotes that concept that the doctor is the all-powerful, all-knowing God who determines, you know, who has the, you know, who holds life and death in their hands. But the truth is, so often it's not about a cure. It's not about us fixing it. But I think that that is something that it's almost like you have to like really examine the social constructs and the rules that we agreed to or that we just inherited, and then really question that and reconfigure, recalibrate, what does it mean to me to be in the role of healer as opposed to be in the role of medical authority or emotional authority or spiritual authority?
Yeah. And we've been programmed to give our power away.
Oh God, yes. I mean, so many people in when it comes to their own healing journey, I mean, how many people go against their own instincts over and over and over again because some guy in a lab coat told them this is the way it is, or in a pair of in scrubs or something, you know, told them this is the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've learned to recognize that each person is a mirror for me, and I can help mirror back, you know, so that they can see what they need to see, really. But not that I'm not the healer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it takes time, and it's a process because we have been so programmed.
Well, and if you are, as you know, when we're talking about somebody who's highly sensitive, The other thing is, and especially, you know, so many people who are highly sensitive, so many empaths end up in the roles of like healer, service provider, light worker. And the thing is that a lot of times when people come to us because they need a solution, they're desperate. And empaths are going to be picking up on that sense of urgency. They're going to be picking up on the desperation. And one of the things I've noticed is that not only are we sensitive to picking up on the thoughts and emotions that are coming from outside of us, but we're also sensitive to picking up on what I call the will body and the desire body, that we pick up on somebody's willfulness. We pick up on what they want to have happen, you know, as well as sometimes, you know, just like what they really desire, what they, you know, sort of, maybe it's in ways like the desire body or even like the lust body. But that the thing is, when it comes to that will, you get a patient or a person coming in who is like, who really like, they want a solution. They are, and so not only are you feeling sort of their pain and their desperation, you are probably also feeling the part of them that wants to force an outcome, that has an agenda and an idea of what it is that they want to have happen. And who are like showing up and expecting you to deliver that very specific result.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that pushes you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Things that don't even feel right.
Right. Well, and if you are not aware of how being highly sensitive and empathic may be impacting you as a healer, as a, you know, as somebody in a role of support and service for other people, it can be very, very easy to get sucked into somebody else's agenda and suddenly find yourself not setting boundaries, not being realistic. I mean, even in the conversation at the beginning, or not the beginning, but sort of when you asked me like, hey, give me three simple steps to go from empathic overwhelm to like complete, you know, empathic mastery or intuitive, you know, and intuitive wisdom. And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't work that way. And it's like, if I was at a stage in my life where I was more invested in pleasing you, I would have pulled something out of my butt and come up with an answer because I wanted to please you. I wanted to do that. And I think the thing is having the wherewithal to be able to stand in our authority and say, I completely get that you want this to be better. I totally understand that you want relief right now. And unfortunately, this is going to take more time, or unfortunately, that's not how it works. And, you know, I will do the very best I can to be here with you, to show up with you, to find the solutions that work for you. And this is a journey that we're going to get to take together. But it's sort of that capacity to say that, you know, these are the boundaries. And being honest, like giving people realistic expectations, because I think that's the other thing that happens in our society is that because of sort of the fear of the loss of the sale, whether you're talking about literal sales or you're more talking about buy-in on the part of another human being to keep participating in the relationship or in sort of the game, often I think people will tell people what they want to hear as opposed to what they really need to hear.
Yeah. And if you weren't so centered, yeah, you could have gone that route, but I felt you immediately go into your space and then respond in a way that added to the conversation, right?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have to go down a certain path.
No.
Course, right?
Yeah.
So it moved into a beautiful explanation. So thank you.
My pleasure. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have an example of when you found that shift, maybe that would help people?
Let me see.
Probably many, right?
I have had so many. And in many ways, for me, it was an incremental shift. Some of the very, very early point, the very early start of the shift, I actually was really lucky to have a really gifted therapist who was very, very intuitive when I was in my late 20s and early 30s. And when I actually, most of my 20s. And when I was working with her, when I met her, she was the first person who helped me to start to recognize that the distress I was feeling so frequently had been precipitated by a conversation with somebody or by being in an environment or in a place where something was going on. And she was the first person who helped me to recognize that what I was picking up on was not mine. And so there was a period for me where it was like, first, I started to just understand that it wasn't mine. And then I started to recognize what the experience was like when I would be picking up on sort of, like, for example, I tend to get premonitory, empathic overwhelm before really big events happen. And I will feel out of sorts and blue and wonky and weird, often for like a week or even a couple weeks prior to something happening, like school shootings or like 9/11 is an example. The nightclub shooting at Pulse was an example. The Hurricane Katrina was an example. And so I went from just kind of walking around like, why do I feel so weird, to suddenly being like, oh, I'm feeling really weird. This probably something's coming. And the thing is that it was, and this is kind of a side or sort of an aside, but I received a book review for somebody had written a book review about empathic mastery, which was clearly who the reviewers, I personally, I think they chose the wrong reviewer, because this guy was a skeptic and didn't believe in any of the spiritual stuff, and basically was kind of like extremely snarky about the fact that I was talking about like psychic ability and past lives and all of this stuff. But what they said that I thought was really funny was they commented about how I had had premonitions and was really sensing things prior to 9/11. And they were like, well, if she's so psychic, then why couldn't she do anything about it? Mm-hmm. And I was like, because while I have psychic ability, I was experiencing the shock waves reverberating from the future into the past about 9/11 as an empath, and I had no idea what I was picking up on. I just knew I was picking up on something. And so I think that's one of the things about being an empath, is that where somebody with sort of clairvoyance or, you know, the ability for prophecy, where they get clear images or a sense of what's happening, will be able to be like, oh my goodness, this thing is happening. We need to leave New York City right now. Empaths will feel it, the emotional reverberations of it, but do not necessarily know what the emotions are about. And so it can make it a lot harder to do anything in advance other than just kind of be like, okay, buckle up, buttercup, we're in for a bumpy ride. And so for me, it went from feeling out of sorts and then an event happening and then being able to go, oh, that's why I was feeling that way, to in the last probably, I don't know, 10 or so years of my life, being able to look at my husband and say, I'm feeling it, something's coming, just watch. Like, let's just pay attention to the news somewhere between 10 to 14, you know, 7 to 14 days from now. And almost always, sure enough, there's this thing that happens where it's like, okay, this is what happens. And I will also say that in my experience, it feels like a pressure cooker where the valve has been released when the event occurs. Suddenly it's like, I can breathe again because I don't have this anticipatory sense of something coming. It has arrived, and it's sort of like, it just feels like the bubble just, or the, you know, the balloon pops. So that, you know, and then to be able to go from that ability to sense things are coming to then going to the place of being able to sense that there is distress And then to be able to really go into my own core, into my, and really do the work to ground and center my own nervous system and move from absorbing and sort of becoming a broadcaster of fear, or an amplifier of fear, to being able to go into the place of all will be well, all will be well, all manner of things will be well. And to be able to broadcast that sense of like really doubling down on faith, really doubling down on trust, really doubling down on connection to some people say 95%, some of us say 99% that is outside of the human experience, but that connecting to the magnitude that is beyond us and plugging into that so that we can then really become beacons for it. We can become amplifiers for it. We can broadcast that into the world as opposed to the amplifying, the worry, the agony, the misery, the fear. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that is a very, I know it's a very long answer, but it is, you know, I mean, we're talking, I mean, I started picking up on, and I started being aware that I was picking things up by the time I was like 7, 8, 9 years old. I'm 60 now. It's been a journey. It's been a real journey.
Well, I was going to ask you with mastery, if you felt like you were a filter for the fear that comes in these situations.
And I feel like I was more of a sponge for the fear initially I feel like I was a sponge for the fear. I feel like I was like, I was kind of like a like I just happened to be this absorbent sponge and like a magnet for the fear that just all of the, like I was a receptacle. And I will say that when people own their emotions, when people are willing to claim what's going on within themselves, I believe that it is much, much easier for an empath to not absorb it. That I think that what happens is empaths will often be sponges or magnets for the unacknowledged feelings, for the unfelt, you know, for the stuff that other people are just not willing to or not wanting to deal with. The only time that that is not the case is when we are talking about the premonitory, like the ripples of shock that come back from time. Because, you know, if you start really going into kind of the quantum physics and you start going into like the kind of like where the woo-woo world meets the science world, time is a construct. Time is an illusion. And beyond this lived experience, there's a lot of esoteric, as well as now science is starting to catch up, saying science, you know, time is an illusion. Therefore, when you have a massive, significant event that causes great shock, that shock will be felt, quote, before it happens. And that, I think, is something that is different than being the psychic sponge that's just picking up on the denied feelings. Because a lot of times when we are picking up on the shock waves, it's, in my experience, it's usually for an event that has such great magnitude, it's almost unavoidable. And in that case, it's more like we're acting as kind of a filter as opposed to acting as a sponge.
Yeah. What I was thinking is that originally you're a sponge, right? As an empath.
Right.
But over time you learn to be a filter in order to transmute some of these really big fear energies or shockwaves, like you say.
Yes. Yes.
Be the purpose of so many empaths being on the planet, if we can just learn to be these.
Well, I also really believe I actually channeled the first draft of a book about our evolution as a species and what I believe we as empaths are on this planet. And what I would actually say is that I believe not only are we serving as, you know, can we serve as filters, but I also really believe that we are all awakening to our empathic sensitivity as a species because we've been living in an illusion and a lie that we are separate on this planet, when the truth is we are all cells in the body of this earth. You are part of, we are all part of one large living organism. And just like a colony of bees, you know, it is not like an individual bee is not a, is not separate from the colony. The colony is the life form. The bees are sort of the cells of it. You know, that we as human beings and all of the creatures, all the plants, everything that's on this earth is part of a living organism. And we are part of something substantially greater than ourselves. But somewhere over the last like 5,000 years, when we started to, you know, focus on agriculture and patriarchy and empire, we really kind of lost the plot. And we have become more and more sort of perceiving ourselves as separated, perceiving ourselves as individuals. And what I believe is happening is that as more and more people are awakening to their empathic sensitivity, we are awakening to our interconnection, and we are also awakening to the consequences of our behavior, so that things like, you know, gun laws in the United States are becoming completely like where we could kick the can down the road for a really long time, because it's like, not in my backyard, not yard, not happen to me. You know, why do I have to worry about it? It's not my problem. As empaths, we're like, feel more and more of us feel the impact of choices that we as a species are making and are being given an opportunity to make really different choices. And so I think that we are in the process of evolving in this really amazing way, where we are coming to understand that we are all one, as well as these individual sparks of light that shine on this planet that are here to make, to just, that are here to ultimately not make a difference in the world, but to generate joy, to generate love, to generate play, to act, you know, to access our deepest heart's desire and express it in the world. Because trying to fix a problem is still to focus on the problem. But when we start to tune our frequency to joy and delight and pleasure and love, that's what we amplify. And so ultimately, I think as empaths, our job is going to be less and less about filtering through the misery and more about being beacons for amplifying the joy on this planet and expanding on that. Because worrying about the problems, as humans, our ego loves to worry about problems. And I'm not saying ignore the problem by any means, but worrying about the problem nonstop is directing all of our attention still towards what's wrong instead of really focusing on the solutions and what is right.
Yeah. So true mastery would become an amplifier of.
Yes. Yes.
The good vibration.
The good vibration. Yeah. And it's so funny to me, you know, when I was channeling the book this summer, one of the things that came through, you know, was like, there are so many moments of joy in the world. Like there are every single second, I don't know the exact statistic, but there is a mother and maybe a father who is picking up and holding their baby in their arms for the very first time and looking in the face of this beloved and being like, here you are. Where have you been all my life? Oh my goodness, you're finally here. I'm so glad you're here. I love you. And that this is an event. This is a moment that's happening constantly all over the planet. The moment when somebody makes love with their true love for the first time, the moment when somebody gets that glimpse of their beloved for the first time, the moment when somebody like wins a championship, the moment when somebody completes, like sings the most perfect aria, all of these things that are ecstatic and wonderful are happening constantly on this planet. And yet empaths so frequently are dialed into focusing on or picking up on the misery instead of on the delight and the joy. And so one of the things for us as highly sensitive people is, what if we really start focusing on and tuning into the frequencies of joy and pleasure and delight and just all the good stuff that is happening here at the same time that some of the challenges are happening?
Yeah. So yeah. It's a redirect.
Yes. A redirect, but also it's more than a redirect. It's a complete pivot. It's like you're standing in the middle of the world. You're standing kind of in the middle of a room and there's two doors. There's like the door of light and joy and pleasure on one side. And then there's the sort of like the abyss of misery on the other. What door are you going to go through? Like, which direction, where are you going to focus your attention? And at first it may be redirecting ourselves, but eventually it becomes calibrating with something that is about joy and delight, as opposed to calibrating with sort of the lower octaves of the human experience. And what I want to say is that is not the same as spiritual bypassing or light washing or just complete denial of problems. That we still, I believe, want to cultivate and have profound love and profound compassion for all of the people who are in a state of misery, who are stuck, who are broke, who are going through really hard times. That's one of the things that I think a lot of people in the sort of the new age world sometimes miss out on, is that understanding the magnitude or the true nature of the divine does not mean that you suddenly become a insensitive jerk who does not have compassion for somebody who is just being pulled, is going through the ringer.
Yeah, and there's a reason why empathy is a very close cousin to an empath, right? Like,
yes. Or in some ways, sometimes empathy is the antidote. You know, in the sense that empathy to me is really about that compassion, the capacity to have that hold that compassionate space for another human being in or any circumstance, any creature, and what they are going through without judgment, without, you know, rushing into rescue, without like, you should be doing this instead. Like that empathy really is just such a quality and a trait that we really do want to master. You know, and ironically, sometimes when we are really caught up in the sort of the lower octave of being an empath, it makes it very hard to really have that loving, detached compassion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jennifer, do you think we've covered, you were commenting on how there's an oversimplification on TikTok about empaths come from a trauma response or from trauma.
Yes.
Do you want to just speak on that?
I would love to speak to it since you brought it up, and it is something that has been really front of mind for me. First off, I just want to say I've been hearing some people who are just basically saying, you know, there's no such thing as an empath. An empath is a trauma response for people who grew up in dysfunctional family systems and who had to be hypervigilant and basically develop sensitivity to micro emotions, micro behaviors, like to just pick up on the incredibly, incredibly subtle cues. And while I absolutely believe that being highly sensitive can be activated and amplified by traumatic experiences and by intensity, I think that it's incredibly, number one, I think it's not understanding what a true empath is, because empaths are not just picking up on the microaggressions that are going on in the world, or the micro emotions that are going on in the world around them that are perceivable within their home environment. Empaths are picking up on things that are happening across the planet. Empaths are picking up on things that have not yet occurred. Empaths, in my experience, have extrasensory perception. Now, in the science world, that doesn't end with certain people who are in the science world who do not believe in psychic ability or extrasensory perception. They basically think that, you know, this is just all hooey. And so for them, it's, you know, they're like, well, people who call themselves empaths are just hypervigilant, you know, survivors of child abuse. But what I would say is, number one, if that was the case, if trauma was the cause of being an empath, then every single person on the planet would be an empath. But I also, because, you know, it, and the thing is, you can have a family where you have one person, you have three kids raised in the same family. One is an empath, one is a narcissist, and one is just kind of like somehow managed to find their way through, made lemons out of, you know, lemonade out of lemons, and is just like living their best life. And if trauma was the source of it, then one might argue that trauma caused, you know, that trauma, then everybody would be an empath. What I would say is trauma may activate something that is latent, but there has to be something about that human being that makes them empath, makes them highly sensitive empaths to begin with. The trauma may be the catalyst, but it is not the cause. And I also will say that the definition that many of these people are bringing up in the TikTok world these days, in the Instagram world, and, you know, social media world, about this idea of picking up on the subtle cues, that only applies to the immediate environment and applies to relationships, you know, to the relationships that people are in. It does not apply to when you're talking about somebody who can sense, like, a family member or a friend or a situation where they are on the East Coast and somebody is over on the West Coast and is and just had a health crisis, and suddenly they're feeling it and they're like, oh my God, something's going on. I need to call that person. These things do not fit into the categories that these people who are sort of these clinical people who are saying it's a trauma response are speaking about. And I think part of it is because the word empath is not a clinical term. It actually comes out of science fiction. And it is a pop culture term. It is a reference that has grown since, you know, the first, I just did a 4-part series on TikTok, actually 5-part series on TikTok about the origins of empath. It started as a novella in 1956 by a Scottish author named J.T. McIntosh, who wrote about these people with the ability to sense and pick up on the motives and the emotions of people around them. And then it, you know, the next reference was in the original Star Trek. There was an episode again called The Empath. It wasn't until, and then it was like many years later when Star Trek Next Generation came out with Deanna Troi, where we had our very first, like, long time representation of an empath. And then from that, all of a sudden, empaths started to proliferate and we started having more and more, like, pop culture references to empaths. But the thing about this is, because this is a pop culture reference, you are going to get, your mileage may vary. You're going to get a lot of different definitions. So to that clinician on TikTok, an empath is a hypersensitive trauma survivor who's hypervigilant and picking up on the micro cues from the world around them. Okay, that's their definition of empath. My definition of empath acknowledges the capacity for extrasensory perception, the capacity to pick up on paranormal things, and the fact that this is substantially greater than just the immediate environment or the immediate surroundings, as well as the fact that I know empaths who did not grow up in traumatic environments. I personally was very, very fortunate to grow up with two healthy, emotionally balanced human beings. There was no alcoholism. There was no drug addiction. There was no physical abuse. There was no emotional abuse in my childhood. I mean, I certainly, ironically, my experience of abuse was bullying because kids looked at me and saw me as different. So instead of it being that being an empath was caused by my experience or my trauma as a child, ironically, I would actually say that my trauma was caused because I was recognized as an outlier. I was recognized like I was one of the misfit toys, and the other kids knew it. So I was harassed for being different. I didn't become different because I was harassed. I was harassed because I was different. And so, when it comes to this idea, part of it is just what is your definition of empath? So for these clinicians, sure, that may be what they believe and perceive. I personally am like, yeah, no, this is a much broader, there is much more going on than you can just simply say it's, a trauma, hypervigilant trauma response to micro actions, micro emotions. And it is just the magnitude of this is so much bigger. And when we just look at it like that, again, then if we're only looking at it as like, oh, this is about my trauma, I need to heal my trauma, then we're never able to do the thing that I think is so vital, which is to say, this is not mine. Because for me, two of my absolute favorite sayings in the world are the Polish proverb, not my circus, not my monkeys. Like really, like not my circus, not my monkeys, not my job. And then the other one is your poor planning does not constitute my emergency. Just really just backing up and being like, not mine. And I think that when we're talking about empath, the idea of the empath is forged from the fires of trauma. And again, like putting it back at like, you got to do your trauma work. There's a way in which that deprives us of the opportunity to be able to look at it and go, not mine, not mine, not my problem, not my monkeys, not my circus, not my circus, not my monkeys.
Right. And it simplifies it so much that it destroys the universal power that's within each of us, right?
And yes. Yes.
So not cool.
Well, and it turns empaths into victims. It's like, it's this idea of like, well, you're just a victim who's like claiming these special abilities or something. And it's like, but it's just, I find it sad that it's so pervasive right now that there are so many people who are sort of jumping on this bandwagon of it's just a trauma response, because it just feels oversimplified. It feels really invalidating. It feels really dismissive. And it also feels kind of like you're just taking a whole group of people and placing the victim crown on their head. And for me, true empathic mastery is really about sovereignty. And true sovereignty is about recognizing truly what am I here to do and what am I not here to do. And doing the things I am on this planet to do and serving my purpose, but simultaneously not volunteering for a bunch of stuff that I am not responsible for.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Love it. Thank you so much, Jennifer. It was such an empowering conversation. I am in deep gratitude.
Oh, Jane, this has been a wonderful conversation. I just love talking about the dynamics around healing, particularly from the side of the healer and our sometimes hidden agendas. So this has just been a delight. Thank you so much for having me.
Such a delight. And how do people find you?
It's pretty simple. If you are interested in finding me, I've kind of got a system. You can go to empathicmastery.com to find the whole ball of wax. If you want to buy the book, you go to empathicmasterybook.com. If you want to learn more about my, about the program that I teach, the Empathic Mastery Academy, that is, you guessed it, empathicmasteryacademy.com. And if you want to check out my podcast, which is called the Empathic Mastery Show, empathicmasteryshow.com, where I talk to and interview a lot of highly sensitive empathic people about how being an empath has impacted any aspect of their life, but especially how they turned from empathic overwhelm to using their gifts to make a difference in the world. So empathicmastery.com, empathicmasterybook.com, empathicmasteryacademy.com, and empathicmasteryshow.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Oh, Jane, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
If you've enjoyed the information in this episode, share it with someone you care about and know will benefit. There is one thing for certain: meltdowns are inevitable. Let's move into mastery together. In the show notes, you'll find my Linktree, which has links to many of the most popular platforms. You'll also find links to connect to the featured guest, webpage, and social media. Thanks again for being committed to mastery. Change in this world really starts within each of us.